This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Bridgerton post-show recap. Today, we are talking about season 1, episode 8 of Bridgerton, After the Rain. That's right. We did it. It's over. I'm Kirsten McInnes, joined by half of our Dark Walk quartet. Sasha Joseph and Sarah Carradine are here. Sarah, how are you?
I'm wonderful. I've brought you sugared almonds and licorice.
Oh.
So fancy. My goodness.
Of course.
Sasha, how are you?
I'm doing well. I've just brought my, you know, unquenchable thirst for the Duke.
This is really get like your last it. Chance.
Yeah, I get know. Him while you can. Get him while he's hot and wet.
Ugh.
Oh my God. Not
from
this
the
again.
Rain. From the rain.
We're not there yet.
We're going to talk about after the rain.
All right. Let's talk about after the rain.
Yes. So we're done. We're almost on the season. Very exciting stuff. But we've got some loose ends that need to be tied up in this episode, and most of those do revolve around our couple, Daphne and Simon. So they are not talking. They are very awkward. They're getting a portrait painted. And
they're getting a portrait painted by Benedict's sort of friend and mentor, yes. The artist that we've spoken about before. And he notices Randall. That they are so far apart as to not be displaying the happiness that naturally they should be feeling.
He's like, get a little closer. I know you're in love.
I just love that he's like, this is so awkward. Stop it. Do better. Don't act like this.
I feel like even after they got a little closer, it was still like an awkward pose.
Yeah. I just think it's really funny because I think Daphne, right, we know this is her first like brush with love or sex, rather, say not love. And so every time he touches her, it's like she's in another dimension. And it's like, oh, to be that young and dumb again.
Oh, he touched my shoulder.
Right. And now I'm just like, why are you touching me?
Get off.
Like, literally. So you are not a physical touch.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
This is fine. This came up last time when Angela was here that she's like, don't touch me. Separate bedrooms are the way to go. And I was like, but if I don't get cuddled, I'll die. Like, I'll be unwell.
That's my husband, yeah. And I'm very much not. So it's a struggle.
Get him a body pillow to cuddle.
No. Like, because I get so cold, I use two blankets, and he even hates that. He's like, no, we have to share the same blanket. And I'm very much like, don't talk to me. Like, it's sleep time.
You're going to have, like, separate bedrooms, and you'll get him a maternity pillow so that he can feel.
Listen, I asked, and I was very much given a look, so I stopped.
That is hilarious. I know. I feel like it's nice to have the option.
Yeah. But he said, I married you.
two bedrooms is ideal. Two bathrooms. Two bedrooms, if you can, obviously. If it's within your means, if you're a Bridgerton, but not if you're a Featheringham. So, because
they don't even have a damn house.
They've got no money. They've got a house. They're about to have no Lord Featherington. So I'm jumping ahead, I know, but yeah, they're about to lose everything.
Not good for them. We also get the Penelope and Marina of it all, where Marina is very ready to leave and go home. The season is over. The experiment failed, and she can leave.
She also feels that the tea she brewed in the previous episode has worked, because if it hadn't worked, she would have felt something, and she's felt nothing. So she is convinced that all in the downstairs department, you know, she's got an empty basement suite, and she can go back to the farm. And, you know, resume her life without Sir George, but also without the bebe.
She's very much assumes that the pregnancy is over, which I don't actually think we talked about the tea like in depth last time, but just so sad. Oh, so sad.
I mean, it's just, it again comes down to everything we talked about, right? Education for women, zero or negative, actually. It's almost. It's so bad that he's hurting them. So it's just, at this point, just tell them nothing instead of telling them, like, the most fake nonsense.
When did condoms get invented?
Honestly, that's exactly what I thought early. And I forgot to research.
Yeah, very early they used goat membrane.
Dating back to 1000 CE?
Yeah.
I mean, people have been having sex in the... since the beginning of time, so I guess condoms needed to come. So what happened here?
Was very ill. She fell to the ground. She was clutching. They found her on the ground, and now she's better. So, I mean, we would know that nothing had been expelled, but if she doesn't know, then she doesn't know, as you say.
No,
this,
I mean,
this lack of education.
Yeah, no, I mean for condoms, like to not even get to this place.
So it looks like for like rubber condoms didn't come about until 1855. Oh, and then so latex came out in the 1920s. So Bridgerton in 1813, like there would have definitely been some sort of barrier devices that would have existed, but it wouldn't have been like a condom as we know it, and certainly not like mass produced in the way that obviously now you can just go get like a handful for free from like any clinic.
Oh yeah, because in 1700 it looks like they had animal intestines as condoms. So
that's just a sausage.
I guess it's really basically
literally.
But they probably, but if you're on a farm, isn't that the easiest
I know that this is so besides the point.
Right.
But, like, how do they make the animal intestine condom not smell to the point that it ruins the arousal of the – I guess everyone smelled bad.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Well, also, I mean, you if you have ever made a sausage, that it has an odor, but it's not a rank odor. It's washed.
Got it.
I've never made a sausage. Yeah, I've been a vegetarian since birth.
Yeah, and as
you weren't a vegetarian before you were born.
Well, I think my mom was a vegetarian at the time, so
you were sucking her blood.
Oh, well, yeah, it was a parasite, like all fetuses.
Not this again.
Not again. Why does it keep happening?
Oh my god! I also want to say it's interesting that everyone's talking about leaving, except that when the Duke is like, with for Marina, everyone's like, okay, yeah, yeah, get the hell out of here. Like, we're ready for you to leave. But with the Duke, immediately Daphne just shuts that down. And she's like, no, you're not going to leave until this ball is over and until the end of the season. And yeah. He's just like, okay, what? If you're so mad at her, shouldn't you have some kind of a backbone? But no, he's so in love with her. I just wanted to highlight that. It's so funny.
And I also think it's like, regardless of how he feels and what he wants and, you know, how he feels about his dad's view of the dukedom and all of that, he still wants to make a good impression and like to look good in the eyes of society. Like, he spent his whole life working on, you know, improving his speaking skills and being perfect. So if he leaves and leaves his wife in town to host a ball alone, it would reflect poorly on him. And that's also not something that he can handle, in addition to being in love.
Yeah, and also even the visit to the drawing room at the Bridgertons, all she has to say is, oh, my brothers will think it's strange if you're not there. Right, he's there, he goes. So, yes, he does have that eye to society while maintaining the air of not caring, I think. But it's the ticking clock, right? The season is over in 3 days. So we also think, all right, come on, 72 minutes to tie up everything.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like a lot happens in this episode.
Yeah, like a lot. Yeah. I was watching it and I was like, oh, it's still not over. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Literally.
But it's great.
We also get, I guess we could just wind up the Marina of it all. Mm-hmm. Does that work for you two?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
You know, Daphne had put out the feelers to try and get information about George, who is away on the continent, and they get the answer in the form of his brother being there with the very unfortunate news that George has died on the battlefield. He did know about their child that was coming, and he wanted to do right by Marina and be with her, but he died before he was even able to post her letter that said that.
Yeah, she is completely overcome by this half-written letter that Sir Philip, George's brother, has brought her, and she tells Daphne privately, he loved me, he loved me. And she feels loved and cherished and returned to her, you know, her knowledge of herself. She feels bad that she ever doubted George, but I also want to say, Marina, don't rely on a man for your self-worth. But it is to be understood how she feels, and it's a moving moment, and her eyes are full of tears but sparkling. So it's this real mixture of that George is dead but that George loved her and he never intended to leave her. But she doesn't really want to marry Sir Philip. Sir Philip would like to look after her. She doesn't want to do it.
And I also just want to say, and this is light spoilers for Bridgerton series book 5, which is Eloise's book, but that book is called To Sir Philip with Love. So I am very curious on if that will still be the case in the show or not.
Yeah. That's
because of Marina. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, and here's my other question, right? Why did Marina have to have such a sad ending? I still don't understand. Like, why couldn't he have just shown up, Sir George, and it would have been a happy, like, she's just, I don't know. Like, I still don't understand why they needed to give her this, like, horrible, sad ending, because I'm assuming they're not going to bring her back. So just, like, let her ride off in the sunset. Damn it.
Right, like it just doesn't, I feel like it just makes things a little bit more sad and tragic to be like, okay, well, Marina doesn't get what she wants, and like, are those supposed to be the consequences of not falling in love? Like, I just don't understand what purpose it serves to do it like this.
I loved it narratively because I think I said last episode or the one before that there is a not a fellow feeling but a similarity between her and Lady Featherington, Portia. And one of my favorite moments of the entire series is when Marina has realized that in fact the baby is still there. It has not gone anywhere. It is now kicking, that she must accept Sir Philip's proposal. And she goes to speak to Portia. So it's almost like a woman-to-woman moment. And she says to Portia, how did you do it? How did you live a marriage for 2 and 20 years where there was no love? And Portia just is the realist that she is for the entire season, just saying, look, you find small things and that your children are part of the, you know, the joy of your life. And I love that kind of resolution. Yeah, it's a sad resolution for Marina, but it's a resolution of the sort of Lady Featherington Marina battle, where they actually stand together as woman to woman, and that she has something to give Marina, poor though it is and bleak though it is. So I actually like it. I like the acid in the sweetness in this ending.
Listen, I'm here for a romantic story. I want happy, like happily ever afters for all characters.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Correct.
I'll tell Shonda for season 2.
Yeah, please let Shonda know.
Yeah, if you could Shonda and like anyone who's going to call themselves also a romance writer, mm-hmm. it doesn't have happily ever after. It's not romance.
Well, this one is Shonda, queen of heartbreak. So it's on brand. Unfortunately, if you're Scandal, Grey's Anatomy, how to Get Away with Murder, bam, yeah. then nothing is happy ending with that lady.
But yeah, the only thing that's even remotely a happy ending I can think of is that the way things have actually been left with Jackson and April is very positive.
Yeah, that's the literally only
one, because it looked like it was going to be really bad, and then they saved it. So
it's because apparently the people or
the actors care a lot. That was trending today.
Yeah, me too. I saw that.
wrote that whole article. Oh,
anyway, but yeah, I feel like justice for my girl. She deserves better than to be in like an unhappy situation.
Yeah. I wasn't reading it unhappily. I was reading that Sir Philip wanted to do his duty and he wanted to look after Marina as George would have liked. I mean, there's going to be a bebe. They might have a wonderful domestic partnership. Lots of people have domestic partnerships.
But will she ever have sex again? Like, that's so sad.
They'll have sex.
Come on.
That's my question. That was my question.
She likes cake.
Yeah.
I wonder if he looks like his brother and if that would make it weird, though.
I must say no.
Didn't it used to be like a custom where like if a husband died, then the like widow would marry that man's brother? Like, isn't that a thing that used to happen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. At least in the Torah, I know that is the case.
That's all I need to know.
Mm-hmm. The oldest book says so.
Okay, so we also at the end she realizes she's still pregnant, leaves with Sir Philip, which I feel like we fully covered, but just to close that loop officially, we also have the Eloise exposing Lady Whistledown thing, where she is really heavy into thinking that it's Genevieve / Madame Delacroix. She became convinced in that carriage ride home with Benedict in the last episode. And so she goes to the shop, though it is closed, to, quote, buy a dress for the ball, even though she has one. And I thought this was quite comedic, with Benedict hiding in the back. I don't know why he came downstairs, though.
Probably because he heard his sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's probably like, this little runt. Why is she here?
He's in a very attractive state of undress. Madame Delacroix is in a marvelous brocade dressing gown. Eloise, take a hint.
She doesn't know what that is. You have to remember this poor.
She doesn't know.
Because if she knew, she wouldn't have gone, because I think this is the next morning after they picked her up. And so you'd think that she would put together that maybe Benedict is with her.
She doesn't know what that means. She doesn't know. You get married. That's
she still doesn't know how babies are made.
But it's a wonderful...
No, Daphne didn't even know that you need more than one nightgown. So Eloise don't know anything about
she
what happens.
She doesn't know you
night.
Need no nightgown.
Basically. Yeah. Nightgowns get in the way.
But there's a great scene here between Eloise and Genevieve. And Eloise is trying to hint, because I know you're Lady Whistledown. Lady Whistledown better be careful. Lady Whistledown better do this, this, and this.
She thinks she's so subtle.
I know.
Eloise, who we all think is at this point is Lady Whistledown, she answers, and it all makes sense if you think she's Lady Whistledown.
Yeah.
Yes, that Lady Whistledown is clever. Lady Whistledown knows what she's doing and all of that. And Eloise is extremely pleased with herself and leaves the shop.
Yeah, I couldn't. I love that she's like, she should know that angering her customers, it's not good. Like, stop. You're so silly. You look so bad, Eloise. It's embarrassing. Got her
full-on makeup on.
Right? Oh, my God.
We also have – so there's another boxing match in this episode as well, and this is the – this we also get the setup for this boxing match in this episode, correct? Or am I feel like I'm getting episode 7 and 8 confused.
Yeah, we had the setup in 7 where Lord Featherington suggested to Will that he might like to throw the match and he would put on his opponent and split the purse. And Will said, absolutely not. And at the beginning of this episode, he lies awake beside his wife staring at the ceiling. So we know something's up with Will.
He spends a lot of this episode, you know, worried about his family and their future and what to do next. His wife is very against him throwing this match, but he is like, this could release, like, I can't just go around getting punched forever, basically.
Yeah.
Which, you know what, fair. And I wouldn't want to get punched even one time, let alone for my livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
So we do get that. Simon does go to the match and Will does throw the match.
Yeah, and so there's talk about honor and what greater honor there could possibly be than looking after your family. So while this is Will's excuse or justification to Simon, we know that Simon's hearing it a different way. So all the threads are plaiting together. And meanwhile, Anthony's come to the boxing match and is making eyes at Sienna across the crowd.
Oh, he's making more than eyes with Sienna.
Yeah, he's trying to make babies.
The boxing match scene is so bizarre because it's cutting. It's like on Riverdale, they'll do cuts between like a musical number and someone getting beat up. And it's just like that, except instead of a musical number, it's Anthony and Sienna having sex like under the ring. Like, where are they?
Under the bleachers. It's a vigorous rumpy pumpy underneath the bleachers that people are sitting above their heads.
Just like Riverdale, like under the bleachers, let's be honest.
Like literally under the bleachers, I don't understand it. It's so bizarre to me, but whatever. Will's getting paid, Lord Featherington's getting paid, Anthony's getting laid. It's a big
thing. I like that. It's so weird because Sienna is literally with the nice man who, like loves her for who she is. We don't know anything about him, but I just mean, like, he accepts her, right?
Yeah, in my brain, he's a nice man, and he understands the situation.
And
he's young and attractive.
She's cheating on him with this low-down, dirty person that does not
love
her.
You have to start loving Anthony. You have to start loving Anthony.
Listen, I actually watched the trailer for season 2 just so I could be like, okay, let's get hype. And that guy was cute. I was into it.
I do feel like they've made much better stylistic choices for his clothes, hair, and face.
His hair looks so different. He looks so much younger.
So much better. He looks like someone that I would want to consider dating as opposed to how he is in this season where he looks like a fool.
Yeah.
I know the season 2 trailer made me so excited, but it's fine. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations to hair and makeup.
Was actually one of our questions too on Discord. A few people actually asked in different ways. Someone said they were excited about Anthony for season 2, and then someone else was like, I'm really not liking it. Why are we so excited about Anthony? I'd rather skip to another child.
I feel like it's totally fair to feel that way after watching season 1 and the way that Anthony has acted, but I just need you to know that season 2 is going to be a totally different vibe. We're going to actually get some understanding of why Anthony the way he is. Why Anthony is the way he is, why, like, his motivations and all of that. And we're going to get to see him fall in love with, like, such a cool leading lady. Like, I absolutely am so excited. I'm so excited that they made it the Sharma family and we've got some Indian representation. It's going to be so good. I can't wait. Because, like, in books, Anthony's book is probably the best one out of all of them.
Wow.
Oh, wow. I think we will love him through her because we love her so much.
That's what I think. I think I'm excited for Kate. And I'm going to be like, okay, the man she loves has to be good enough. I can't hate on him.
And, like, we're going to be mad at him a little bit. But, like, come to his senses. He'll figure it out. It'll be okay.
Well, we were mad at Simon as well. So I think that works.
I'm still a little mad at Simon, actually.
Yeah.
He just needs therapy. His dad really screwed him.
He really does.
Duke Daddy really did a number on that boy.
He is now Duke Daddy. So.
Okay, so.
So should we finish Anthony and Sienna then?
Yeah, so we have the moment before the ball where Anthony and Sienna are, like, cuddled up in bed just talking, like, in various states of undress. And this is the first time I've ever actually been like, oh, there's affection between these two people. Because all we've ever seen this whole time is them, like, banging against a tree, banging under the bleachers, banging right in front of the open door. Like, we've never seen any non-sexual component of their relationship. And it was, I was like, oh, there is love between these two people. Like, it's the first I've ever even noticed that.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's, like, the point of it, right? Is it that now Anthony finally feels free? And that's why it's almost their relationship has changed because of it. And, you know, he's not just kind of going as an escape to Sienna. Or, yeah, is it that it's finally time for them, but it's too late?
Yeah.
Well, and he also just doesn't get it because they're cuddled up. She has to go to the ball. No, he has to go to the ball. She's, like, asking, oh, are you going to waltz? What are you – like, very playful, which is very, you know – in the terms of the relationship that they could have societally at this time. And he is like, no, just come to the ball. Like, my sister's a duchess and I am a lord and no one will say anything if I bring you. And it's like, sir, no.
No.
Trying to make a round hole squid fit a square peg, and it's just not happening, sir.
What's she going to do? She's going to arrive? I mean, what is he thinking? Well, he's not thinking.
Yeah. Why are men, right? Like,
literally.
This is very much one of those moments where you're just like, yeah, they maybe sometimes do share one brain because what is going on, right? Like, would she come with you, Anthony? You know, she's gonna have to be stuck with you the entire time because your mom is gonna stare daggers down this lady.
Oh, Violet will murder you, Sienna.
Yeah,
like, you'll be dead.
Yeah.
So it's
she knows.
It's horrible.
She knows because this is, I mean, we are being shown, look, one of the things and one of the reasons that I will ship Marina, I wish she had had a happier ending, but I don't object to the ending that she had because we have the privileged women, we have the working women, and then we have the working women. I mean, she's an opera singer. And the ease with which men can travel through the different classes and the rigidity with which women are stuck in their classes. Mm-hmm. And so this is the huge difference between Benedict and Anthony, is that Benedict is trying to find how he can live that bohemian life, but he's no more expecting to live the bohemian life within the ton than fly to the moon. He knows that life is there, available, but it is outside of society. And Anthony can't understand that there's no way to do this and that it would be damaging to Sienna, who he purports to love.
He's being super selfish. He's only thinking about himself, that he would like to have her there and not considering the consequences for her. And that's what she says. She says, we can't do this because you don't understand what this is supposed to be.
Yeah, and I just love her line because she says, I know you're lost, but I will not let you set me adrift anymore. And that is the realest line ever because she's like, you know what? This man's a hot mess. And he has status, so everything that I am not, he is. So if I am to, you know, hitch my boat to this, it all means that I might get stuck in the storm, which I don't want to be. I have a perfectly fine person here who's willing to love me, who I'm assuming doesn't have the same, like, level of, like class.
Or he understands that he can have a mistress,
right?
And that's what the relationship is.
Yeah, either way. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Either way, he's willing to like bring her out in public and it's not this like ordeal.
Yeah.
And it's not in the shadows.
She says he doesn't. This is the nice man that we've all decided is a nice man. He's young, he's attractive, he's well dressed, presumably has money because he can keep her. And she says he doesn't want to change me. He knows who I am. He knows who I am. And exactly. I think that's sort of a relief and a resting place for her and a security for her, because she's been looking for security, you know, in her life, because she has to make her own way. And so she says, "Let me go, you bloody little idiot." She doesn't say that bit. She says, "Let me go." She has tears in her eyes. He has tears in his eyes. And she closes the door in his face. And that is the end of their relationship.
Yes. Is that how it ends in the books too?
She doesn't exist in the books.
Oh, right. I keep forgetting. Oh-ho! I keep forgetting.
We like the way the books work is that they're all just like such different universes from each other that like.
Got it.
Like, I mean, she maybe exists in the books in like an abstract way that Anthony probably had a mistress. And it might even lightly come up in the beginning of book two that he like.
He's been a wife block.
Or yeah. whatever.
Push her aside. Yeah.
But. There's never any interaction got it. With like a mistress like that. And so it's really, I think that the challenge of this being a TV show is that they're trying to intertwine all of the stories so much that it's fundamentally changing how things are set up and adding right. new things in. Because if this was just Daphne and Simon's story, it doesn't leave you any room to be ready to feel anything about any of the other Bridgertons for like season two and beyond. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a book series, you can put it down and you're like, okay, well now I move on to the next one, which is about someone else. Yeah. And it's just like a different experience. But sorry for yelling at you about this. I'm just excited.
So the last we see of Anthony is the day after the ball. Daphne says, "I didn't see you." And he says he was under the weather. He was under something. And he says he is now ready to marry. And they get very excited. Oh, who could the young lady be? He said it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's just going to pick whoever the best whoever. One is.
He said yep. love complicates everything. We don't so do not- love.
And it's just what a thing for someone who just got dumped to say, right? It's like, love is pain and love only hurts you. So I say no to love forever. And it's like, okay, you baby, like give it a couple months and you'll be okay.
And you're going to meet right. someone, you're going to meet someone very special and you don't deserve her, but we will applaud it nonetheless.
Yeah, so we'll make it work.
He's set up for season two, and that's the end of him.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, we're going to get a whole season. Buckle up, kids.
And listen, I think it's going to be really good. I think it's going to be really good.
I think
really
so,
good.
Too. I think so, too.
We also get Daphne finds out about what really happened to the Duke in this episode. She asks him before the boxing match, and she finds the letters that Simon had sent to his father that were never read or opened, and she's now understanding a little bit why Simon is damaged.
Yeah. that Duke daddy said basically, if you're not perfect, then I don't want any part of you,
or you have no choice but to be perfect. Like perfection yeah. is they're normal, and anything outside of that equals you're not worth any of my time. And like the fact that he hadn't even opened the letters, like it's, I don't know how you can, like, even if you see a random child right on the road, and if they're like, look like they're even in a little bit of struggle, you know, I don't know about y'all, but I feel like at least something about me will be like, is that kid okay? Right. Even if mm-hmm. I'm not saying I'm going to go to the depths of, you know, whatever to mm-hmm. save it or whatever, but I'm just going to make sure that, oh, is there an adult around you or something? So imagine your own flesh and blood, right? To see this, it's so horrible. And what an idiot. What a horrible, horrible human being. And this is why, right, Simon, in his brain, he feels that, oh, because I'm not perfect for Daphne, it equals I need to not be with her, period.
Yeah. Lady Danbury has the secrets that luckily she sees Daphne reading the letters and gives her a little bit of the inside scoop. So there's a little bit of the older women coming into play here, both Lady Danbury. And finally, Violet Bridgerton has some good advice. Finally. And they can guide. They can guide the younger woman here or the younger women.
Well, I also feel like when it comes to Violet, there's a little bit of more give and take, because at the start, Violet is being like very intractable and is not willing to have the Featheringtons at the ball after what Marina and them did or tried to do to Colin. And Daphne is like, I think we should forget the sins of the past and move forward with grace. And I feel like that moment of kind of seeing Daphne as a woman who is, you know, wise and kind and good opens Violet's eyes a little bit more to be able to give her the good advice later on.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. And we also get at the ball, we get Eloise saying to Daphne, I want to thank you for something. I want to thank you for being perfect so I didn't have to be. Which is a very much a double-edged sword that Daphne realizes, oh, okay, so I'm in this as well. I'm at fault as well.
This is another question we got, actually, where someone asked, do we think that Violet is a bad mom?
No.
Exactly. I was like, no, I don't think she's a bad mom. Is Violet a terrible parent? I feel like she drops the ball so much this season, especially on Daphne's wedding day. Well, and I think she's naive. I don't know.
Like, it's fair to ask the question, but when you're seeing an example of a legitimately terrible parent in the form of the Duke's father in this series, like, Violet is not perfect. She certainly makes mistakes and doesn't know what to say to Daphne, like on Daphne's wedding night, but she's always trying to do her best by her children. And, you know, if she didn't get like a great sex talk from her mother, and she just was very fortunate in being married to a good man who like showed her the ropes, and they did it together. Like, we don't know enough about her past, I think, to really make a judgment. Other than that, she's trying her best, and she's been a single mom for a long time too.
Yeah. And she also, when it seemed that Daphne was going to marry the prince, she didn't speak out against it, but she was concerned that she didn't understand why this match was attractive to Daphne and what Daphne was doing. So she was trying to be supportive while also holding space for, is this the right thing? So I think she's hampered by her times. She's not perfect, but, you know, as we learn from this episode, perfection is not where it's at, you know, that we love everything about the person or the situation, including all the dark stuff. And, I think she absolutely does her best, which is – it's a great thing to do, everybody. Try your best, but also imagine that other people are trying their best as well.
And it's – she has built her and her husband, but you know, now it's just Violet, have built this family right out of love that the Duke actually is excited by and, you know, sees a lot of like, oh, y'all sit together and eat dinner, right? It's just something as small as that. So you can tell that at the end of the day, she loves her children and she's gonna do right by them. And she's sometimes naive because no one did it for her. And I think she had to figure it out. And her husband, because they were in love, I think did a lot of probably the heavy lifting with all that stuff for her, as in he taught her. So she was like, well, the Duke's a good guy. He'll teach you. Little did she know that this Duke has his own trauma and might mess things up.
And the other thing, too, is that she's informed about the proposal, like it has to happen fast because something happened and she does not know what happened. So
she's like, sex happened.
Probably thinks that Daphne already banged.
Right. Exactly. So it's unfortunate, but that's why I just wanted to bring that up as well.
The fact that she didn't teach Daphne that ejaculate makes a baby is fine if the husband is not withdrawing. So it was information that she didn't know she needed to give because she doesn't know about the Duke. So, she is as flawed as we all are, but I don't see her as a bad parent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Agreed.
So this conversation with Lady Danbury is what gets Daphne. Too much Violet on the break. This gets Daphne thinking about the Duke more, and she goes for breakfast in the same room that he eats breakfast in, where they've been eating separately, asks him to join her for a family function with Francesca because she's returned from, I think, Bath, they say. And there, it looks like she's putting in a lot of effort to try and reconnect. And he's, of course, in love, so he's not fully closed off to the idea.
I mean, I just love that she's wooing him. Like, that, it's so cool. I appreciate it because I think, unfortunately, he is so broken that she does need to, you know, do the heavy lifting, right? Relationships are sometimes not 50-50. I feel like they're very much sometimes one person has to give 100 and the other person isn't, you know, isn't able. And I think at this point, Simon loves her. It's so obvious, right? Like everything she asked for, he's like, yeah, obviously I'm going to stay until the end. Obviously I'm going to come to your parents' house for breakfast. You know, all of that, right? He's saying yes to everything because he loves her, but I think he just doesn't know how to be a partner, a good partner, because he's not seen it. And even Lady Danbury, right, didn't have a partner that Duke could see. So it's really been no one. So I appreciate it. I was like, yeah, you woo him, girl. Let's do it.
Woo! But here again, we see, you know, Simon is jumped on by the two younger Bridgertons, and they think he's brilliant. And there's just something about the adoration of children that's like really right. Flattering. It's really flattering. So he makes a paper pony, origami.
How
pony
does he know
for them.
Full origami?
He probably went to Japan. Like honestly, and probably learned it. Like he's so perfect. Who knows?
Or he went to a Japanese lady anyway.
Well, yeah.
But so he, again, is everyone's charmed by the Bridgertons. I mean, this is the annoying thing about them, that while we are annoyed by that, we also would think, oh, if I was in that drawing room, I'd love them all as well. So it's mm-hmm. it's just how they are. They're the product of a loving home. They've had the example of a loving parents, and they've been allowed to sort of fight and roll around together and have dinner together. And it's, you know, it's a very nice upbringing. And he missed that as well. Let's not forget, he didn't have brothers and sisters, you know, who can be your raft and can help you if the parental, you know, example is not good. And he didn't even have that.
Yeah. And so it's very sweet that this family gathering, and it kind of goes back from that to Daphne and Simon looking at their finished portrait. And it's such a throwback to episode I can't even remember if it's one or two, but they're discussing what they're going to do at the ball and they're planning on how many dances they'll have together and bargaining for what will look good. And it's just such a cute little reminder of where this little scheme started.
I know, and I love that they both start laughing about it immediately because they're like, oh, not this again. We thought we were, you know, past it. We've had sex multiple times. Like, it's, you know, we're in such a different place, but it's so sweet. And I appreciated seeing that side of them, but then it quickly goes back to, you know, I still don't want kids, right?
Yeah.
This guy.
Oh, the sigh.
It's the thing is like, obviously I don't want to be in a position where I'm like, oh, someone says they don't want kids. Well, what if they change their mind? Because like,
horrible.
That's problematic,
do not do that.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's not something that you should ever say to someone. Like I have one coworker who's like obsessed with the idea of me having children. And I'm like, it's not happening.
Ew.
Like it's not. And she's like, but you're depriving the world. And no, go away. Leave me alone.
That's so weird.
Like we are not friends like that. We are coworkers. Like we have never hung outside of work. And this is how she acts. Anyways. So like people act like that. It's really gross. But also I'm like, Simon obviously like loves kids and wants
yes.
to be a dad. He just like has his pride is in the way. And so it's like, Daphne, just like slow down, continue wooing, like give it time and you'll get there. It'll be okay.
Yeah, because he told her yeah. about the vow and she's like, so you'd rather pick someone that's dead over yeah. me? And he's like, yes, correct.
Correct.
I will let a dead man ruin my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That he's already ruined enough.
So during the ball, we have the upshot, almost upshot of Eloise's investigations into Lady Whistledown. She approaches the Queen, and the Queen's majordomo, Brimsley says, where do you think you're going? No,
I need to speak straight up to the Queen.
I know, it's brilliant. We love Eloise. But she is starting to get some wiles herself, because when she hears from Brimsley that the there is a plan afoot to capture and stop and punish Lady Whistledown, she immediately turns on the charm, which she's learned somewhere. We've never seen it before, but good for you, Eloise. And she flatters him about, oh, I bet it was your idea. You're so, you know, you're so clever. And like all villains, he tells the entire plot of his villainy to the hero before it happens, that they have figured out that Lady Whistledown takes her work to the printer at a time when the whole town is at a ball, such as this evening.
Yes.
And so they are, the Bow Street Runners are staking out the printing shop, and they will capture Lady Whistledown when she comes.
He straight up gives her the address for the printing press. Yeah. Like, he, this man is stupid. He should not be working.
Well, we know he's like a gossip, so it actually
He should not be working in close proximity with royalty.
No, he's just so proud of himself. He's like, I figured it out. We got her ass.
Yeah, but I mean, Eloise works for it. She's, you know, she gets what she needs. So she must now rush off and get into a carriage, her own carriage, and bribe her own footman to take her to the printing place.
Feigns illness to leave. And there was also a really good moment at the start with Eloise and Daphne at the ball, where Daphne's like, you showed up. That's all I need from you. If you want to go and read in the library for the rest of this ball, I will not say a word. Like, it's, you're good. So their relationship is less strained as well. But Eloise leaves because she's got to tell Lady Whistledown.
It's a trap.
And she like pays a footman. I was like, isn't this your footman?
I have pin money.
Oh my god.
I mean, she doesn't pay the footman's salary. Violet does.
Oh, that's true.
Like, do you think if, like, I can't, that this is so ridiculous to me, but like, can you imagine if you had like a chauffeur growing up and your mom was like, no, you can't go to the party, and you go out and you're like, hey, can you drive me to the party? They're gonna be like, no, you don't pay me, stupid. Like, you're staying home.
And it's like, how much ever I can pay you right for one night, it's not worth me losing a whole career or my whole job over.
He's young and he has a ridiculous wig on his head. So what's he doing?
I know. He's like, let me just go. Let me get some fun in my night instead of standing around.
Thankfully, they don't get caught, so it's okay.
Yeah, that's true.
And thankfully, Lady Whistledown doesn't get caught. She hears the carriage. She realizes that Lady Whistledown is coming. She jumps out of her carriage, and then she sees the Bow Street Runners.
And then she goes, I thought it was someone else.
Yeah.
Listen, how did she get away with this? Because women are so underestimated that I think it works.
Oh, you dumb woman that you thought it was someone else. No. And she calls out to Lady Whistledown. It's a trap. So she doesn't see Lady Whistledown, Lady Whistledown's carriage. Gallops off into the night, and she feels very satisfied that she has saved Madame Delacroix, aka Lady Whistledown.
Does this mean there will be no Whistledown tomorrow morning?
Yeah, probably not. Unless Whistledown has other ways to get it, which I assume she probably has fail safes.
Because this is like, we do find out at the end of this episode who Lady Whistledown is, but we do not actually find that out until at least the end of the fourth book in the book series.
Right.
And they outline how Lady Whistledown does her business, and it does not involve going to a printer press during a ball, because of course, spoiler alert, Lady Whistledown is Penelope, and she would actually have to be at these balls.
Right. And she's like missing juicy gossip at the end of ball if she would be leaving. Yeah.
In her bright yellow dress, the Featherington girls have new dresses because of the money that their father has made in the bet, which is going to be his downfall as he, during this ball, drunkenly goes to a brothel, and they have a special room just ready for him. He walks in. The bed is empty. But there are some, the men that he made the bet with are ready to reckon with him.
They said, we're not giving you your money because you fixed this. You fixed it.
And I mean, to be fair, he did get the money.
Yeah.
He did, but the money gone when Portia goes to look for it. When she hears the news, your husband is dead.
At first she thinks it's something about Marina. She's like, Miss Thompson? Where are you? What happened? And then she's like, oh, it's my husband. Not this.
Yeah, not this.
He gone.
He gone. So the end of the he did.
And because someone else is going to be taking over some man. We don't know who might it be.
And we don't know. And like all of this is new to the show from the book. So I can't even be like, well, here's what happens.
Do you think it's like a future suitor?
I don't think so. Because like most of the main characters already have like people spoken for them.
That's true.
The only thing I can think of that would be like dramatic would be if it's like somehow by distant relationship, like Nigel Burbrook is the
person. Don't do that.
Because I think that in the books, one of the Featherington sisters marries a Burbrook, but I don't know if it's Nigel or someone else. Or I can't remember. So I could see it being something like that. And then like you know how in like sisters. Pride and Prejudice, they try to get Lizzie to marry the heir so that they get to keep, like, someone gets to keep the home. Like, I feel like it could be something like that.
That makes sense.
And hopefully it's someone we haven't met yet or someone that we, like, don't know well, because the only other person that, like, narratively makes sense is Nigel. And I don't want Nigel.
No.
And we know Nigel has no brothers because, as his mother said, once perfection had been reached, there was no need for another.
Well, what about that other – or Nigel's kid? But that's
so – No, that's just a young kid.
He's a Fitz.
So the last that we see of the Featheringtons is the Featherington women on the steps of their home, and the wonderful housekeeper comes with a folded piece of paper. She has found out who the heir is.
And I think it's very weird that Lady Featherington didn't just know who the heir was. Like, normally there would at least be some sort of knowledge, especially because all of her children are daughters and they're all mostly grown. So at this point, it wouldn't be like, oh, well, we're still trying for a son. They would know who the heir is.
So it's a bit of narrative convenience, you think?
I think so, yeah, because the only other situation where I can think of a show doing something like this with the heir is Downton Abbey, and that makes sense because the known heir dies on the Titanic, actually. And so in the first episode, it's like, who is the new heir? And they find out pretty damn fast.
Yeah, I think we'll know soon, because in the trailer for season 2, we actually see that the Featheringtons are there. Obviously, because we need Whistledown. So I'm assuming we're going to know soon.
Well, and whoever the heir is, I feel like would have an obligation to marry off these girls. Mm-hmm. So I could see it also being someone who's like, you have to stop dressing them like this.
Yeah.
What are you doing? We're going to have good taste and nice things.
I know. I'm going to go back to the trailer now and see what color outfits they're wearing. but either way, it's very interesting. I don't know. And that was one of the questions we were asked, is like, what do you think about them telling us about Lady Whistledown so quickly?
I'm conflicted, but also I feel like it gives them – so on the one hand, I'm like, oh, well, we're not supposed to know yet. But also – I think it gives them so much more room to make things interesting moving forward, right, of like what Penelope sees and does not see, that I think it's ultimately a good thing. Oh.
Yeah. And I think it's like less plot points. Like, we just know that Penelope is there and like she's going to report on it.
Yeah. And if there was any peril that we see her in, which she's nearly caught or something like that. So not having read the books, I was perfectly satisfied and, in fact, happy to find out who she was, particularly as I was completely convinced that it was Genevieve Delacroix.
Same. They got my
they
ass.
Did a really good job with that. Something I did not do a good job of was placing a spot for an advertisement in this podcast episode. So we do need to take a short break, and we will be right back.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back.
Oh, my God. But we also need to say, I think we forgot that the boxing match, Will Mondrich does lose. That's why Featherington gets all the money, which is really unfortunate.
Yes. I think we mentioned it in passing.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to bring it up, honestly, is because the Duke shows up, right, and starts chirping at him, which is like, why? You know, why is the Duke constantly in their marriage, which is seemingly probably one of the most perfect marriage compared to everyone else, at least? And why are you in their business like that? Don't
also,
do it.
Like, Simon, why didn't you just bet against your friend and make some money? Like,
right?
I know you're rich, but like, why not?
He's too moral. He has too much morals, I think.
I'm sorry. That's annoying.
Yeah, stop it.
Honor, honor, honor. No. Blood. No, I'm looking. The best honor is to look after your family. And certainly Will and his wife Alice do come to the ball. And Simon notices that Alice has a beautiful diamond necklace. So Will has looked after her very much. We are fans of this. In this podcast, we stan Alice.
Oh my God, yes. I wish we could get more Alice.
Agreed. I wish that bare knuckle brawling had more to do with the ball.
Right? Oh my God, please. Because I just love how she's constantly dragging the both of them, like Will and Simon. She's like, both of you, Tweedledee Tweedledum, come over here.
Get literally.
Oh, I love it. And I looked up the trailer and Penelope still has that god-awful yellow on.
Oh, cool girl.
It's literally a plot point too, though. Because the Penelope and Colin book is 7 years in the future, past like 3 years past this. So it's like 10 years down the line, her and Eloise are like on the shelf. And so now she's allowed to dress how she wants. But when she's young, her mom is still in charge.
I love this. Okay, got it. Can't wait for that.
And these girls are going to have to start wearing dresses again. And as one of the other daughters said, can one wear a dress again? She's never heard the like.
Oof, mess. They're all so sweet and naive.
I like when I buy, like, and I know obviously I'm coming from a very different time and place and socioeconomic point, but like to me, I'm like buying clothes. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to wear this like 100 times. Like, I don't think I've ever been happy about something that I could only wear once.
Yeah. Indian outfits, I will say, like, you can't really repeat. Like at weddings, like we feel like we have to buy multiple outfits. Like it's one and done.
Well, and like that's like special occasion stuff like that is totally understandable.
It's so expensive and stupid.
It sucks, but also like.
But yeah, so that's what I think of these dresses as, like those kinds of outfits, not their like everyday moment.
Yeah, they probably wear the same day dresses all the time.
It's just the ball gown. Why do I need 5 nightgowns? Apparently,
you need no nightgowns, really.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what was the laundry situation like too? Not good.
Dress pads. Dress pads were like, if you imagine a shoulder pad folded in half under your armpit. So you would stitch that, well, your maid would stitch that in, and then they would stitch, and then they would unstitch that, and that's the thing that would get washed. And the muslin undergarments would get washed.
Yeah, I do follow a couple of people on TikTok who do like era appropriate costuming, and I've definitely seen those before. It's so foreign to me, obviously.
They were still wearing them in the 1950s, 40s and 50s.
Yeah, they even up to the 40s and 50s, there was more of like a, you could buy like disposable ones that you that would like take more of like a pad kind of situation. Yeah. I've definitely seen that.
Hmm.
Honestly, should I start wearing those? Maybe.
Depend. I mean, not.
I'm not like a stinky, sweaty person.
It depends. I don't know. Because I feel like, how much water are you saving, right? Because are you going to wash them by hand? Actually, that might take up more water than like a good washing machine that maybe is like energy efficient.
You know what? You're making some excellent points.
Yeah. And we're not big corporations that actually need to make the big changes that are literally polluting the water as we speak.
Yeah. So we're being sold the fiction that
we're not Leo who can just like get mad about climate change and then take private planes everywhere.
Exactly.
Okay. So
the summit, right? The climate change.
Literally, like, I'm sorry, what?
Stupid. Ugh. Anyway,
an idiot. So
let's talk about our idiots. Our idiots. Let's talk about Stephanie and Simon.
Mm. Our idiots.
Yeah.
So at the ball, Lady Danbury is giving Simon a little bit of crap about the separation, and you know, giving him advice that having too much pride will cost him everything.
I love it, right? Like, she really is the only reason he is not out here in these streets, like, wilding. Like, he is the man he is, I believe, because of Lady Danbury. And thank you. Thank you for making a character. And I know that's not how it is in the books, but for this
we still stan Lady Danbury in the books.
Yes, got it.
Oh, good. Great. There's a shot of Violet, Lady Danbury, and the Queen at one point, all standing side by side, all looking extremely proud and pleased as they watch Simon and Daphne dance. And it's the most wonderful shot because it's like, yep, let the women do the work. Like, between the three of them, they got this happening, but it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yes. And so Daphne and Simon are having their waltz at their weirdly outdoor ball. I really feel like a Duke and Duchess would not be having an outdoor dance, but
I
whatever.
Liked it.
No, it's cool, but I feel like having the event outside in the evening would be odd.
Yeah. I think it's odd, but only for how it looks on camera, I like it. But practicality, absolutely zero. But for the vibes, I'm into it. And listen, it rains, so people get to leave early. That's a perfect party for me, where it's like, you don't have to stay too long. You can leave by 9. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, but then they miss dinner.
Listen, well, there were little bites circulating.
To-go cups. The servants were waiting with the plates at the end.
Oh, my God.
My little doggy bags.
But, yeah, so they're dancing outside, and is it Lady Danbury who says, like, I think that they should dance alone. No one else needs to join.
Yeah, she said everyone's GTFO.
And then
basically,
she says, yeah, the ball's over. Everybody go home.
Yeah, once it starts raining and, like, Daphne and Simon are so into each other and, like, absorbed in each other, she's like, okay, that's the night. Get out of here.
I love that the queen, she tells the queen, get out. And the queen is like, yeah, I see it. I'm going to go. They're going to make a baby tonight. And I need that money.
I wonder to what extent this scene happening in the garden makes it like more meaningful for the queen to see after we've heard the queen talking with the king in a rare moment of lucidity about the gardens and the time they spent there. Like, I feel like she's probably really in her feelings at this.
No, she's like so entrenched, right? She's in the weeds with these two because of everything, right? Like, her nephew just got dumped by this girl. So, and then now she put like 100 whatever wager on them having a kid. So she's in it with them, and she loves love at the end of the day. We've seen that too, because they do a moment. I can't remember if it was last episode or this one, right, where they show all the marriages basically in different ways. So
yeah,
I feel like she's in it. And I think, yeah, it was the start of this episode. And that's why I think she's like, yeah, you can boss me around because I love them too much.
So everybody does leave, and Daphne in her gown with the muslin top of the gown inside, showing her lovely bosom, which was what the ladies of the time used to do, have a little muslin slip inside, which they would spray down with water. She doesn't need to do that. The water is falling from the heavens. Simon says, ah, it wasn't perfect. And she says, but I don't want perfect. And that's what we've both got wrong. We don't want perfect.
And she tells him the truth. She tells him that she found the letters, that he is worthy of love, and that your father messed you up and he was wrong.
And I love that then she walks away, right? After saying all this, like, it gives him a moment, obviously, to ponder. And I think she's not, like, begging him to love her, which is what
she's not asking him for anything. She is declaring, I am going to love you.
Yep.
I'm going to love all of you. That is what I am going to do. And she's not even asking, you know, she's not a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her back. She's saying, I will love you. And that is my declaration. That is what I'm in charge of. And I can and will love every part of you.
I know. And at this point, I'm waiting for her to be like, and that's enough for the both of us, right? Like, that was the next cheesy line. Because I was wondering why John Legend's All of Me didn't start playing. Because she's like, I love your curves and all your, like, imperfection. And I was like, okay, and edges. And we know the song.
I'm actually surprised they didn't get an instrumental of that.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
That would have been fun.
Maybe a little on the nose.
He gets a chance to think about it because he finds her on her fainting couch. She's in one of her many nightgowns, 5, I believe. She's in one of them and a lovely peignoir over the top of it. And he comes in and he's a little bit wet and disheveled. And he speaks to her from his heart.
Yeah, I love it. It's so beautiful and vulnerable, finally.
And so cute. He's like, I don't want to be alone. I don't know how to be the man you need me to be. And she's like, no, you are that man. And they have sex.
And he doesn't pull and pray. Yeah,
he does not. And they both know what that means.
Yeah, they're choosing each other.
I feel like it's earned. I mean, we've been waiting. Yes, we have had them having sex, but this is like fully giving themselves to each other emotionally, physically, sexually. We've been waiting for this for 8 episodes, and we have a satisfactory finish as well.
It's just I love it. I love it. It was a happy ending. Everyone deserves to be satisfied, right? Yeah, obviously. We've been saying this, so it's time. Yeah. We all deserved it.
So the end of the episode and season has just a little bit more.
Yeah.
Eloise is comforting Penelope while she cries, and at the same time Colin is leaving to travel. But of course, Penelope's just found out that her father is dead. So that's probably more so the cause of the tears. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time when I watched this, I forgot their dad had died. And I was like, I can't believe Eloise is so understanding about her being upset about Colin leaving. And then I was like, oh, right.
Yeah. I also had that right now when I watched it. I was like, why is she crying so much to Eloise? Because at first I thought it was Marina that was holding her for some reason. And then I was like, Eloise. And then I was like, right, her dad died.
Oops. Yeah, well, the man that we have not liked and we have found to be unpleasant and lecherous and selfish.
That we just literally forgot.
Yeah, because we don't care that that he's dead. They certainly care, whatever, emotionally, but also practically.
We can only hope that he had time to put that money actually into his daughter's dowries before it got taken back.
Mr. Finch! Mr. Finch was the suitor of one of the girls. Yeah. Philippa.
Yeah.
One of
Philippa's suitors. Hopefully the money is back so that Philippa can get with Mr. Finch if he has not chosen another young lady already.
But this is a very nice setting because this is the departure of Colin. So he's going to get on his horse and drive away. So the Bridgertons are all out in Grosvenor Square and the Featheringtons are all out and everybody's all out seeing this happen.
It's also when Marina leaves as well.
Mm. Yeah. So departures left and right.
Yes. Benedict lets Eloise know that he was with Madame Delacroix / Genevieve last night. So Eloise realizes she could not possibly be Lady Whistledown.
Grasp. And then it's like, oh, and now she's like, it's almost like a montage of putting things together. Oh, I did talk to Penelope that it had to be someone in their house, that it had to be someone that wasn't at the Queen's luncheon. Bam, bam, bam. And then cut to, it's Penelope with her hood down.
Yeah. That was so dramatic. That's dramatic as hell.
So extra. I loved it.
But yeah, it's her. We get proof that it's her. And, you know, she could be the savior of her family because she's been selling these every day to everyone in London. So surely that money is somewhere.
That's absolutely what I'm hoping, right? Like, is it that Penelope saves her family instead of this man? And that's what they needed to show her as Lady Whistledown?
I think that that is a really safe bet.
Mm-hmm. It's just, this was done so well because we flash back to the night before, but we see it from inside the inside Lady Whistledown's carriage. The Louise saying, "It's a trap, it's a trap." Galloping away, the hood. Who is it? Who is it? And then she pulls down her hood, and she looks quite different. She has an expression on her face that it's hard to read, but it's wonderful and made me very excited to see Penelope's journey in season two.
And it's also nice to know, because you just look at how this whole season Eloise has wanted to be just like Lady Whistledown and has wanted, you know, that strong woman in her life and that example. And it's been her best friend all along. It's just chef's kiss.
Oh, she's probably fangirling so hard now. She's like, I'm in. I'm in. I'm all in, baby.
Oh, man. And so then the only last scene that we get is, it's a little bit in the future because Daphne is giving birth and she has Simon on one side and her mother on the other, just the total opposite to the birth experience that Simon had. The baby is born. It's a boy. Simon holds his son right away. He wants to hold him, and they decide that they do have a family tradition and this baby's name is going to start with an A.
So it's like, shouldn't it been I? Like H? Yeah, I.
Well, I think it's like each unit will start over at the alphabet. Like,
it's funny. It's sweet. I appreciated the stark contrast from his birth. That is, like, I feel like the only other birth we saw on here. So his birth, which was traumatic for, I mean, all of us, even to watch. Versus like Daphne's, which was this beautiful, supportive environment for
during the day. The room was full of light. She had two people holding her hands and kissing her hands, and everyone was very, very happy. She was cawing like a crow, which I appreciated. She was making very unusual noises, and I thought, oh, good for you.
Did they give birth on their back then too? Or like, I was like, would they have stood up?
I feel like wouldn't there have been a point where they'd be on all fours as well?
Yeah, that's what, exactly.
But I don't know. I'm not a doctor or scientist, so I'm not going to pretend to know what would be.
Yeah, I know someone that gave birth on all fours, like now in 2020.
Well, in the 50s and 60s, they were still putting women in stirrups. So
yeah, I was like, it's better for you to not give birth. Like, this is just,
it's like you've got gravity helping you out a little bit.
Yes. Listen, women, they've been ruining us since the beginning of time.
Truly. And yeah, so that is it. Season one of Bridgerton. Sasha, I know you were compiling some questions. Do we have any others that we need to hit?
Yes. The only other one I think we need to talk about, everyone was also hoping that there would be a cute puppy as well, which I believe, if you saw the trailer, there is a corgi.
Yes, so season two will have a corgi.
Yes. So wanted to just bring that up. And then, you know, in true Outlist form, Mike Bloom did ask us to rank the Bridgerton children.
This is sickening to me.
Right. I know. We have to do it every, I think at the end of every season and see how it changes.
This is hard because I feel like I can only rate based on the books and like how I actually like them.
Yeah, I know. Yours is going to be actual, like comprehensive. I have like a
fully like fleshed out ranking of them. And I feel like it's also not like, it might not be like the most, it might be a little bit of a hot take.
Ooh.
But
well, I would put Eloise at number one. What about you?
My number one is Benedict.
My number one is Colin.
Oh. Yeah, he was my number two.
That's my top three. I had Eloise, Benedict, Colin.
See, and yes, this Eloise is my fourth. There's something that you won't be able to. I have Eloise fifth, actually. My number two, and it's going to be hard to understand. I have Hyacinth as number two.
Oh, she's my number four.
Her story is so fun.
Yeah.
I have, and then I have Francesca as number three.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
I put Daphne as three for now, because she's a mess. But I love
she's my number five.
Yeah. She's my number four. And then I have Eloise just after.
Yeah.
It's just once you get Eloise's like love story, it just makes so much less freaking sense than anything else. And she's not as visible in the first couple of books as she is in this season. So I'm just like, she doesn't make any sense, but I still like her. So that's why she's my five.
Yeah.
And then I have Anthony six, Gregory seven, and Francesca eight, because I don't know Francesca. So I had nothing to go on.
Anthony's like second to last only because I don't know Francesca.
Yeah, I have
Gregory above Anthony.
Yeah.
I have second.
Oh, yeah. I did.
Yeah. So then I have Anthony six, Gregory seven, and then Benedict I have as eight.
And that means this book is going to be so bad.
And I just need to say, it's not because the book is like so. Basically, Benedict's book, the third Bridgerton book, is just like a retelling of Cinderella in like 1816 or some shit. Like, it's just like not that interesting. And like in the show, Benedict is way higher up, obviously, and would be above like all these people that we don't know yet and all this. But this is just like in my fulsome ranking. And like, I like the Benedict book, but it's just. Others have more, like, Gregory's book is unhinged, but it's also, like, at a certain point, the Julia Quinn novels just, like, jump the shark in such an insane way. I don't know. I have hot takes, I guess, but if anyone else has read the books, let me know how you're ranking.
Okay, let's do all of ours, okay, quickly then. So mine will be Benedict, Colin, Daphne, Eloise, Hyacinth, Gregory, Anthony, Francesca.
Believe you put Gregory above Anthony. I had Eloise, Benedict, cute, Colin.
Sorry, go ahead.
Daphne, Anthony, Gregory, Francesca.
Okay. And so I have Colin, Hyacinth, Francesca, Daphne, Eloise, Anthony, Gregory, Benedict.
Oh.
Wow.
We're not. And then we'll get Geneva to tweet hers when this goes live.
Yes.
Perfect.
She can't escape the wrath. It's not.
No. She has to rank them. Rank the children. Yeah. How dare you not?
Yeah.
Okay, and so that was the last question, correct?
Yes. Yes. And sorry if I missed yours, but we also have a review.
Yay.
I feel like we should read because it actually leads into season two. So
perfect.
Yeah. Royal Rach 7 gives us 5 stars. Thank you, Queen. And said, or King, I don't know, or person. And I'm
just royalty. Monarch.
The royalty.
Monarch.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Dictator. I'm so excited for season 2 of Bridgerton that I plan to rewatch season 1. So I'm glad there's a podcast that's also recapping the season in a funny yet insightful way. My brand. Thank you. No, I'm just kidding. It's a blast to hear these four ladies discuss the show with their different perspectives. And I can't wait for more. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Rach.
Thank you, Monarch.
You're amazing. Rach, thanks. I feel like that sets us up really well for season 2 because we have our own feed now, baby. So yes. I hope y'all are, you know, by this point, you've probably already seen our tweets about it, but we're recording it ahead of time, obviously.
Yeah, so you can get our feed at postshowrecaps.com/Bridgerton. Please go like, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and review. New subscriptions are the absolute best way to help people find us. And since we're a new feed, we might actually be able to like chart at the start of season 2 if you help us out with subscriptions. So subscribe on your family's devices, subscribe everywhere, please. It's super helpful to us. But we are going to close the Dark Walk until season 2. But until then, Sarah, where can people find you?
They can find me on the Twitter at I just gave myself away.
The Twitter.
They can find me there at Sarah Carradine. I'm covering Our Flag Means Death for Post Show Recaps. And I have a new show over on RHAP with the great Murray Forth. It's called Crime Scene. It's a true crime review podcast. And we will be bringing you True Crime Tuesdays and some wonderful reviews and some amazing guests.
Amazing. And Sasha, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at funsides_04 and over on Silent Podcast. I'm sure I'm probably covering something or another over there, and probably over on RHAP covering, who knows, guesting on stuff, I'm sure. And, you know, there might be a new podcast coming up. So get excited.
Ooh. Amazing. And if people want to hear more from me, I have a weekly BoJack Horseman rewatch podcast with Lindsay Wilson at BoJack Horsepod. Temptation Island is back, baby. So Maggie Morgan and I are covering that at robheswebsite.com/hotdummies. Riverdale is sadly back. So Mary Kwiatkowski and I will be covering that over on Kowski Cast. And you know, you never know when you might hear something new from me as well over on RHAP. And you can follow me everywhere at Kirsten Said What, including twitch.tv/Kirsten Said What. But we will be back next time for season 2, episode 1 of Bridgerton. And so we'll see you then.
Can't wait. Bye, everyone.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.